With the American Way of Eating, award-winning journalist Tracy McMillan adds her voice to the growing conversation about food in America. Getting Americans to eat well has become a critical social issue, and today's Americans are obsessed with their food. The quality of our meals often sits at the forefront of a political agenda and underpins media coverage ranging from childhood obesity to celebrity chefs. There is much written about our food. In the American Way of Eating, Tracy McMillan poses the next big question about the food industry. Arguing that good food should not be a luxury, she investigated whether the standards for eating well are possible or practical for most Americans. Tracy McMillan joins us now to talk about the American way of eating. Tracy, thank you very much for being with us this morning.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
What brought you to the subject originally?
Yeah, so basically, you know, my background is as a poverty reporter in New York City, and so I was doing a lot of work in different communities there, and I realized that in a lot of the low-income neighborhoods of New York, it was actually pretty hard to find good food. And this was one of these things that I think for a long time had been accepted just as fact, right? Like, you're in a poor neighborhood, there's not going to be very good food. If you want good food, you have to go to a rich neighborhood. And the more that I sort of looked at, the more that I sort of thought, you know, that doesn't make sense. Like, why would that actually be the case? And I really wanted to start examining that and looking into that. And then as I sort of moved along in my career, you know, I had done some work around food access. You know, I come from a working class background outside of Flint, Michigan, and the more that people were sort of talking about how important it was to focus on our meals and to pay the true cost of food, the more I wanted to start having a conversation about just how hard it would be for most working Americans to do that. And so I decided that the best way to start that conversation would be to go and check out 3 jobs in the food system and work in them, you know, as an undercover journalist, and then use that story and living and eating off those wages, use that story to sort of examine what it takes to eat well in America.
You went undercover in 2009 to examine how we eat. What questions did you initially want to ask?
Interestingly, you know, I wasn't super invested in the idea of this being an expose. You know, I already knew, you know, from my reporting and from my background that, you know, it's not easy to make ends meet on $8 an hour. And I also didn't think that, you know, by spending 2 months in each job, I would come up with, you know, a fascinating insider tale. You know, that's not how the world works. What I was really hoping to do with the American Way of Eating was to get a little bit inside the psychology of how you think about food and make decisions about your meals when you're living on $8 an hour, when you're working on the night shift at Walmart, you know, when you're working 9 hours a day in the fields in 100-degree heat. You know, I was as interested in sort of the internal thinking, right, that was forming my diet as I was in the bigger structures outside of it.
So you look at a movement in this country of eating local and a movement in this country of being concerned where our food comes from. There is positive and negative to that. There are good things and bad things that come from that.
Yeah, I mean, I think everything, right? There's always a plus and a minus. And this growing fascination with our meals and wanting to know where things come from, you know, I think that's great. I think knowing about our food, how to produce it, how to prepare it, that's a really key component of self-reliance and sort of individual independence. I think that's all really great. I think it's really strange, though, that we tend to be so fascinated with the ecological background of our meals and tend to ignore the whole social system that's on top of it and to really gloss over all the workers that are involved in it. You know, and I'm as guilty of that as anybody. I think that when I was going into the field, you know, I had this idea in my head that American agriculture was pretty much entirely mechanized, right? I had this idea of a thresher and a huge field of grain and, you know, one farmer and, you know, endless acres, and that's how agriculture works. And that's pretty much true for grain, but the fruits and vegetables, you know, the kinds of stuff that we should be eating more of, that's still incredibly labor-intensive. Anything that you're going to buy in a store that needs to look good is pretty much still harvested by hand. And so, you know, there's a whole army of people out there feeding us. And I think for me, that was probably the most humbling realization I had in doing this project was that, you know, I get to do a job that I love, you know, work as a reporter, not just because I work hard and not because I'm smart and not even just because I'm generally have been lucky, but because, you know, there are millions of people all over the world working to feed me. And that was a really profound realization for me.
Do you think there will always be two camps in the sense of those who participate in the greater system of our food and those who believe in growing their own food, in knowing where it comes, the 100-mile diet and so forth, of being much more concerned and put it into more into a manageable system instead of something that, as you say, you know, it takes a village and a city to be able to provide the food that's on our plate.
Yeah, well, you know, everything sort of operates on continuum. So on the far end of the spectrum, you're going to have, you know, people who want to grow and pickle and, you know, sort of do everything themselves. On the other end, right, there are certainly going to be folks who, you know, truly prefer to just be able to buy everything themselves, don't want to know anything about their food, don't want to have to cook it, would just, you know, essentially like food in pill form. And that's pretty normal, I think, for humans. I do think, though, that there's a lot of wiggle room. And I, you know, I'm increasingly convinced that the American people, you know, one of the most deeply held values we have as a nation is the idea that we want to be able to do things for ourselves, right, that we're independent, that we, you know, have capacity for self-determination. And I think that that's a really important component of our diet, too. And increasingly, you know, I had written about this in the LA Times around the time my book came out. You know, Michael Pollan says essentially the same concrete things about how to eat as Ted Nugent, who's a very conservative, you know, sort of gun advocate person on the right wing of the political spectrum. Like, these are men that I think in terms of everything else, you couldn't find two men that are more different. You know, but they both say, you know, don't eat anything you can't pronounce, you know, grow what you can when you can, try hunting, know where your food comes from. All of that is a really deeply ingrained part of American culture. And so I think there's probably a lot more interest in that than people tend to give the American people credit for.
So with that in mind, that notion out there, when you went undercover and, for example, as a produce clerk at a Walmart supercenter outside of Detroit, Michigan, what were you hoping to accomplish? What did you accomplish?
I mean, there are two things, right? I really wanted to get a sense of what it takes to run a produce section and sort of what are the concerns, the pieces of internal logic, right, in the food system as it currently exists. You know, I think journalists tend to do a very good job of critiquing problems, but we sometimes sort of get carried away in critiquing it and don't try to necessarily understand the inner workings of things as they are now. Because I think that when you understand that inner working, right, it's much easier to come up with smaller tweaks that can make a big difference. And so I thought that would be really fascinating. And I have to say, I was really bowled over by just how hard it is to run a produce section. You know, I think like most Americans, I just sort of thought, oh, I go there and I get this fresh food. And I came out of that experience just really feeling like, you know, I need to go up and shake every produce manager's hand when it's a well-run section because it's incredibly complicated work. And then, obviously, you know, I alluded to this earlier, I wanted to get a sense of, you know, how my diet changed when, you know, I was working 30, 40 hours a week at $8 an hour and juggling, you know, a life that, you know, is very different from the one I lead as a freelance journalist. You know, I like to joke that, you know, I probably make less as a journalist than I would have if I'd had a full-time job at Walmart for a year, but my schedule is incredibly flexible. You know, I'm a single person. I live on my own. I can eat whatever I want, whenever I want, and I can cook whenever I want because I usually, you know, I'm working about 10 feet from my kitchen. And so for me, I really wanted to get a look at both of those questions.
And the end, when it comes to digesting all of this information and writing the book, your end thoughts being what of when it comes to a philosophy or guidance that you can offer when it comes to our American way of eating?
Yeah, I mean, I really came out of writing the American way of eating feeling like, you know, one basic thing that we all need to understand and get on the same page about is that pretty much everybody wants good food. you know, there tends to be this real idea that, oh, Americans don't care about their meals. And yet, you know, I've done all this reporting in low-income communities across the country. Nobody has ever come up to me and said, you know what, I would really like diabetes. You know, people are making decisions about diet based on a lot more than just taste, structure, wages, work life. That all goes into it. And we need to sort of be really thoughtful about having that conversation. You know, and then in terms of what consumers can do, you know, for the folks that are already able to go to farmers markets, I mean, buy fresh food there. You know, I just think it's important to start introducing a conversation about labor and ask, you know, how do you guys deal with your workers? Where are they from? You know, what kind of wages do they get? And even in restaurants, you know, the Restaurant Opportunity Center has done some great work around raising the profile of these issues where, you know, you have wage theft is incredibly common among restaurant workers. And just sort of really beginning to understand, you know, that we're sort of all in this together, but that we absolutely can make a better food system if we set our minds to it.
What is wage theft?
Wage theft is when a employer pays less than minimum wage, doesn't pay you overtime, any of the basic things where you're not getting paid what you're supposed to be paid.
Not getting paid what you're worth.
Yeah.
The value. When you also worked as a kitchen worker at Applebee's in New York City, where does that fit in the equation as far as is getting a solid picture of the way that we eat?
Well, when I went to the Applebee's in New York City, I really went there hoping to get a better understanding of how we eat when we eat out. You know, Applebee's is a nicer restaurant than McDonald's. You would think that, you know, I'm going to go out and have a nice meal. And I wanted to understand, you know, what are we eating when we go there? You know, Applebee's is the biggest casual sit-down restaurant in the country and the world, actually. And so I thought that would be a good place to go. And for me, what was really fascinating was to sort of realize that almost all of the food was coming out of plastic bags, freezer sections. The only whole pieces of produce, you know, the only produce that came in uncut were heads of lettuce, tomatoes, and onions. Everything else had been at least chopped and processed somewhere else. Any of the dressings or soups were either made from powders and reconstituted with water, or they came in frozen in bags and then were, you know, defrosted and liquefied and mixed up with whatever they were going to do. So for me, you know, I sat down and did a monetary calculation. I said, well, you know, this steak dinner would cost me about $4 to make from scratch in terms of ingredients. We're charging $18 for it. I think that the next time I go out to eat, you know, if I'm going to pay, like, what is that? That's like a 500% markup. I'm going to get food that's better than what I can make out of my freezer in half an hour.
What does it say about our American way of eating, though, that food that comes into a restaurant in those conditions and with the wave of a wand and abracadabra, it hits the plate and is edible, that we prefer that in some cases?
Well, I don't think there's anything wrong with preferring food that's tasty and convenient. I think that there's been a real lack of discussion about why that kind of food is convenient and other kinds aren't. You know, we've done an incredible job as a country in making processed food really cheap and really readily available everywhere and really easy for people to get to. And surprisingly, you know, we eat a ton of it. Fresh fruits and vegetables are not as easy to get to. They're not, and just by their very nature, right, they're not as capable of standing on a shelf for a long time, and we haven't built systems to make sure that people can sort of get to fresh produce that's rotating through well and all of that. You know, when I was working at the Walmart produce section, you know, I write about this in the book, you know, there was a day where I threw out 200 pounds of asparagus that had molded over in the cooler because the section was managed so poorly, and I came out of that job really feeling like, you know, I don't know that I could really blame anybody for basically eating, you know, budget freezer meals, you know, pre-made freezer meals, if the produce section was handled this poorly, because I have to say the quality of the produce we were selling was pretty awful and probably didn't taste very good most of the time. And in fact, the grocery shopping I did there, you know, I took home melons that I couldn't even eat because they tasted so bad.
It's a fascinating look at the way we eat. It is called The American Way of Eating, Undercover at Walmart, Applebee's, Farm Fields, and The Dinner Table. The book is now out in paperback. It's published by Scribner. Tracy McMillan, thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Anytime. Thanks a lot.
Great pleasure. Thank you. Again, the name of the book, The American Way of Eating, published by Scribner. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.